Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com.
Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on a true story, this action comedy reveals the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Starring Henry Cavill and Alan Ritchson, discover how one mission changed history, laying the foundation for modern Black Ops warfare.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R and in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now. Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. We're here. We're live and direct in full effect with some architecture for you. And first off, let's shout out the architect of our podcast, our one and only super producer, Mr. Max Williams.
Woo. I liked your
kind of classic radio DJ intro there, live and in full effect with the architect of our podcast set.
Yeah, there we go. Let's keep it going. So I'm Ben, you're Noel, and Noel, you and I might be, I don't want to speak for you, my friend, but we might be a little punchy coming in today. What do you think?
Yeah, it's from all those children I was punching on the plane.
You wouldn't let it go. We are like eternally, because we hang out a lot, and we're eternally in these social situations where if we're not sitting right next to each other, Noel, you and I are texting like kids passing notes in class.
Yeah, that's what texting is, really, you know, at the end of the day, right? It's modernized note passing. It was funny, too. We had a flight out from Austin. We had a lovely time at South by Southwest, meeting people, doing panels, all that kind of stuff. And on the plane back, we had a genuine Marvel superhero on our flight.
Yes, sir. Yeah. I think you were sitting somewhere different in the terminal, and I texted you because we were on the same flight with two world famous celebrities. Well, one very world famous celebrity, Anthony Mackie, who plays first Falcon and now the new Captain America in Marvel films.
I didn't know that he was the new Captain America, by the way. That was a giant spoiler for the MCU, Ben. So thanks a lot.
My bad. Because I know you care so much. But
I care enough care to be little. Part of the conversation. Who was the second more important celebrity, if I might ask?
It was none other than, if we could get a drum roll, Max. Or not a drum roll, a sinister. Yeah, there it is. Jonathan Strickland, a.k.a. the Quister, who really wanted us to know he was sitting in first class.
It was like he really insisted upon himself. Yeah, no, for sure. And I'm just glad the plane made it, you know. His nefarious plans didn't cause some sort of in-air catastrophe. But no, to be real, let's do that for a second.
Yeah.
We're actually really friends with Jonathan Strickland. We played mini golf together.
We did.
This wonderful, like, I think it had been around since the 40s or something. Yeah. It was called like like Peter Pan mini golf in Austin. And it's this the kind of thing you think of. I think a lot of our hometowns probably have places like this. For me, it was called Putt-Putt Golf and Games, where you have these like waterfalls and, you know, like giant elephant sculptures and things made of concrete or some other, you know, material. This place was all like down the rabbit hole, kind of Alice in Wonderland, psychedelic rabbits and literally rabbit holing vibes, creepy clowns. We did some cool social shoots for Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. So be on the lookout for those.
If they
those
work
things
out.
Exist. Yeah, I think they're going to work out. I felt pretty good about them.
You know, I felt like we, I feel like we were having fun, and fun is contagious, right? Hopefully still more contagious than COVID. This is what I was thinking. I'm really glad you brought this up, Noel, because Putt-Putt is purposely spiteful architecture. And our pal, research associate, Jeff Bartlett, has been obsessed with spiteful architecture for a while. But what do we mean when we talk about spite architecture? Is it what it sounds like?
I guess so. I mean, you know, well, in the context of Putt-Putt, it's literally things obstructing your success, you know, barriers to you sinking that that cute little multicolored ball into that hole. I think we all actually did pretty well, but spite buildings are specifically pieces of construction intended to irritate and in an act of protest. So, you know, I think we all here love Curb Your Enthusiasm. There's a string of episodes in one of the more recent seasons about us opening a spite store because Larry has a beef with Mocha Joe for whatever reason. I can't quite remember. It doesn't matter because it's petty. It's all about human pettiness, that show. Yeah. So he starts another store next to him, another coffee shop. I think it's just called Larry's something. Maybe it's like Larry's Mocha Joe. I don't remember. It was something along those lines. And he has like an absurd toilet or something in them, but anyway, that's a spite. The architecture is irrelevant there. It's more about the business itself. Here we're talking about making human pettiness and all of that stuff literally manifest through buildings.
Yeah, the idea is that you're going to get back at someone in a lasting way. And we see spite architecture around the world. It's one of those things where once you recognize what it is, you will have an embarrassment of riches when it comes to finding examples. A lot of the origin stories of these edifices, these structures, these statues, these buildings, a lot of them are, you know, kind of embellished. They become a selling point, especially if the thing is a little older. But we're going to encounter some amazing, ridiculous history here. We're talking spurned lovers. We're talking feuds between siblings. And of course, we're talking everybody's favorite, vengeance. Avengers are the architects of spite building sometimes. And there's something really interesting here from a great Mental Floss article called Houses Built Out of Spite by Virginia Claire McGuire, where the author notes, most towns have an oddity or two, an architectural oddity, and it's the building locals love to point out to visitors. This happens pretty often in the United States, but it's everywhere in Europe. You know what I mean? Like you might drop by for a pint or you're getting a snack and then someone says, oh, this building was built in, you know, the 1300s and it was built because so-and-so was considered to be a witch. Like you never know.
Well, I mean, you know, certainly in the earlier days that you're talking about there, it might have been easier to do one of these things, you know, because property wasn't maybe quite as much at as much of a premium as it is today in terms of cost. Because this certainly is a weird flex, you know. I mean, you got to have resources, you got to own property, and you got to have enough money to throw away on a relatively useless building. Maybe not useless. It has its own uses, and perhaps it could be designed to obstruct the view or to take away from, you know, the prominence of another building on the block. But they can also just be constructed. It's almost like cutting your nose off to spite your face, where it's like you're dumping all this money just into feeding a feud.
100%. And that's the thing. This genre, we can call it, of architecture is not built to make poetry tangible. It's not built necessarily as some great, you know, veneration of a loved one. it's built to like do very petty things like block someone's view and frustrate the neighbors. It shows what it, you know what it is? Spite architecture, spite buildings, they're the first next door energy, really. Mm-hmm. And
exactly.
And the motivations vary, but what we wanted to do today, and perhaps the first of a recurring series, is to talk about some examples, because you might be surprised, fellow ridiculous historians, they date back. People have been petty for a while. Maybe we start with the Trevi Fountain. What do you think? This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
If we've learned anything in the process of doing this podcast, just living life, it's that there's always a catch.
So when we heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month if you get a three-month plan, we looked at each other and we thought, nah, what's the catch?
But here's the thing. In this case, there isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online.
Yeah, they cut out that middleman cost of retail stores and they pass those sweet, sweet savings directly to you. We're not joking. We have tried out Mint Mobile ourselves and it's super convenient. And it actually, like, we tried to find a catch and there's not one.
So to get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
That's mintmobile.com/ridiculous. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan.
Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on the incredible true story, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare reveals the gripping tale of the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Get tickets now for this action comedy masterpiece that defies expectations, showcasing how one daring mission reshaped history and set the stage for modern black ops warfare using unconventional and utterly ungentlemanly techniques.
Starring Henry Cavill, known for his iconic portrayal of Superman, and Alan Ritchson, star of Reacher. Get ready for a mission with a little madness and a lot of mayhem.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R, and in theaters April 19th, get tickets now. Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Sure, the Trevi Fountain was built in the 1700s and arguably is an iconic structure in Rome, is one of Rome's most iconic attractions. It was erected on the site of, as we know, the Romans were really good at like building aqueducts and like moving water around and kind of created the first systems of plumbing for all intents and purposes. And so this was actually built at the site of an important water source in ancient Rome. And it's made of the same material as the Roman Colosseum, which is called travertine stone. And the Trevi Fountain really is, you know, a modern marvel, you know, because of the way that it is able to, using gravity alone, funnel water into a really cool, you know, water feature that's also functional.
Yeah. And if you look at this now, what you'll see is the Greek god of the sea, Oceanus, cool name. Not too common in kids today, but Oceanus is surrounded by the merfolk, by merpeople, and looking upon, you know, in a very stately manner, Oceanus is looking upon gallons of flowing water. But if you look very closely, you'll see something called the Ace of Cups. And if you are familiar with fountains and sculpture, then you might say, huh, this one doesn't really fit. This feels like an afterthought almost. The thing is, the Ace of Cups in the Trevi Fountain is not there to be part of the picture. It's not there to be part of the tableau. People believe that it was put there in the service of pettiness. There's no water flowing. It kind of gets in the way. You can't really, I don't know, see it. And I guess we should point out too, Noel, that the Ace of Cups is the street name. The public gave it that name. All this thing does, if you look at it from the right angle, all the Ace of Cups does is block the view of the fountain. And that's where we find a spiteful story.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm trying to get a good image of it. Let's see. The Ace of Cups, by the way, is a tarot card that revolves all around love, you know, whether it's inverted or upside down or whatever it might be. So, okay, the Ace of Cups, I guess, is it this rock feature at the base, kind of?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's basically, okay. Hold on, let me see. Oh, here we go. No. Yeah. Okay. So it's, you know, there's a natural kind of rock feature where the stone is less, you know, hewn. It's just a little more like rough rock faces. And then you have this thing that looks kind of like a vase, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like sort of like something that you might, a planter of some kind, but it doesn't have any plants in it. And it's carved into the stone, sitting on the ridge of, you know, the kind of ledge surrounding the structure, and sort of globe-like with some sort of filigreed little details on it. And then it kind of comes up to a point. But you're right. It is just big enough that from a distance, it could obstruct your view of the most important aspects of the fountain itself. And it's actually what would be considered a travertine vase. And it was specifically tied to blocking a view from a nearby salon, you know, or a barber shop, right?
We're getting to it. Yeah. So back in the 1700s, there's this Italian guy. He's an architect. His name is Nicola Salvi. And he wins a contest sponsored by the Pope. At the time, the Pope was Clement XII. And in 1732, Nicola starts working on this sculpture, this installation. It takes a long time. The fountain is not going to be done until 30 years later in 1762.
Wow.
Yeah, so for three decades, we want to see both sides here. For three decades, all of the people living in the neighborhood are living with construction. And if you, like our pal super producer Max Williams, have ever had to go about your daily business amid construction, you know it can wreak havoc on your nerves. You know, traffic is worse. There's an eternal clang, clang. You got construction crews yelling and wolf whistling. There was one guy who was particularly annoyed about this, and we've got a good quote about the legendary barber here.
Yeah, and the barber was essentially becoming a nuisance for the project. And he was, you know, this was a huge undertaking that was going to take a long time. There's going to be some construction. And this barber didn't like the fact that there was this loud, noisy hubbub going on outside of his shop. Of course, you know, Salvi's the architect. He designed the thing, but he can't necessarily, you know, speed up the process, right? There's only so much you can do, especially when you're working with like hand tools and stuff like that. But the barber just wouldn't back down. So Salvi decided, rather than maybe hear the barber out or placate him in some way or do like they do with movie shoots where they pay off people a little bit that are inconvenienced by the shooting, which of course wouldn't last 30 years. But instead, no, he decided not to take the high road, but instead to take the road of revenge most sweet or foul, or whichever decide you're on, I guess. So he decided to add in this little feature, which is, it really is kind of an example of cutting off your nose to spite your face, because it doesn't fit in with the aesthetic of the thing at all. It, like we've already said, it's odd and it kind of is distracting, but it's also not so distracting that it causes any kind of real issue with enjoying the piece from other angles, right?
Right, unless you are looking from the angle of that barber shop. This is a very big, like, or salon, as you said. This is a very big, screw you, you're never going to be able to see this from your place since you complain so much. Now, revenge is a dangerous, dangerous sword, right? It does as much harm to the person seeking revenge as it does to the subject of that. And so Nicola Salvi doesn't get to see whether his petty plan works because he passes away in 1751, well before the project is completed, 11 years before it's done. And the barbershop, if you go there now, the barbershop is not around either. So it was just one guy saying, hey, you're ruining my neighborhood with this construction. And this other guy saying, hey, you're being such a problem. I wish you the worst view in town.
Indeed. And, you know, it still could be worse. I mean, they live in Rome, which is a beautiful, beautiful place. So the views are pretty good no matter which way you look. But there you go. That's a pretty simple piece of spite architecture, right? Just a little feature, not even a whole building. Like, what if you built a spite fountain that took 30 years? That would be wild and incredibly a real commitment to the bit. So now we're going to talk about another piece of architecture that's not a fountain or a vase, but a wall known as the Jealous Wall. We talked about the Ace of Cups representing love. And this is about love as well. Jealousy is a very interesting facet of love, isn't it?
Yeah, the Jealous Wall definitely sounds like a Depeche Mode song. Depeche, if you're listening, you're welcome.
Depeche. My guy's Depeche.
Yeah. This thing is what's called a folly. It's a neo-Gothic folly. And remember from our episode on architectural follies and garden hermits, back in the day.
Sure.
Yeah, this is, you know, big putt-putt energy here. It was built in Ireland at an abbey in Mullingar, County Westmeath, by a guy named Robert Rochfort, also in the 1700s. In about 1760, just a year before the Trevi Fountain is completed. And the whole reason he built this wall was because he was mad at his brother George. And his brother George built a house, or an estate, you could really call it, called Tudenham Park House. And it looked better than Robert's house, Belvedere House. And he was very, very envious, technically, of his brother. Robert thought that his wife, a lady named Mary Molesworth, was having an affair with another one of the Rochfort brothers, and he locked her up in their own home for 30 years. It's just weird, you know? So, okay, the Jealous Wall doesn't look good either. It doesn't look like the Trevi Fountain. It's like it's built to look like a ruin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's in Belvedere House in Ireland's County Westmeath, and it's essentially just... Yeah, like you said, I mean, it's a very unpleasant, unadorned, kind of raggedy wall, like something that was left over from a demolition, you know? And essentially, it was kind of that, right? Like, what was the construction like?
It doesn't look super creative. It looks like it's built to appear older than it is, and its purpose is entirely to block his brother's view of the Belvedere House. This is a story of three brothers, really.
Brotherly feuds are always very interesting because it seems like they go hard.
And long, yeah. So these folks are, you could call them semi-aristocratic, you know, they're upper middle class for their time. In the 1730s, Robert Rochfort wants to marry this artistic youngster from Dublin. I think calling her a youngster is unfair. She is only 16 years old at the time. She's the Mary Molesworth we mentioned earlier. And Molesworth initially wasn't super vibing with Robert, but they eventually decided to begin a relationship. They settled down. They had four children, but Robert couldn't. Robert got what he wished for, monkey paw style, and he had some regrets. He was always traveling because first he had political duties, and secondly, he didn't really like his family. So his young wife would go visit her brother-in-law, Arthur, to get away from taking care of the kids. Arthur was the couple's nearest neighbor. And Robert started getting sour on the marriage. And one day he comes up to Mary and says, "You're sleeping with my brother, Arthur." And Arthur said, "Dude, no, I'm not sleeping with my sister-in-law." But then Mary said, "Yeah, you know what, Rob? I am. And we should get divorced." And accounts are unclear whether this actually happened or whether just at the time she thought this would be the easiest way out of the marriage. The heat's going at Arthur. He flees the country. And Irish divorce law is pretty strict, so the couple can't break up. They have to be in that situation that unfortunately has happened to some other people where you're no longer in a romantic relationship and now you're roommates.
Yeah, I mean, because you have to get the blessing, literally, of the church to have a divorce. It has to be, you know, it has to adhere to some pretty strict guidelines, you know, for them to give that approval, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. I think you could get something annulled, but that would be the version of, like, expurgation of a legal record.
Well, hell, man, we even have cases where it was hard for kings to get divorced, right?
Yes.
You know, or they had to change the laws or, you know, like, you know, kind of finagle some special favors from the clergy, right? And sort of flex their kingly privilege. But for regular folks, it was super, super difficult.
Yes, super duper difficult. So Robert is now an MP. He's an earl. The British rulers in Dublin like him. He's untouchable. He's beyond the law because he's buddied up with the people who makes the laws. He helps decide what's legal, and he gets mad that basically his ex-wife, for all intents and purposes, is in his home. So he builds another house on his land. He says, "I'm going to live here by myself at Belvedere House." Belvedere is really nice. At the time, it's palatial. It's a mansion. But his brother George builds an even better one on the same grounds. And when Robert sees this, he entirely cuts his brother out of his life, and he's starting to put the pieces together. He's a bit conspiratorial. He says, "You know, my brother George had been really close to me, but maybe he kind of turned me against my wife in the first place. And at this point, it's just worth saying, for those of us playing along at home, Robert sounds like he's kind of a jerk."
No, no question about it. At the very least, he was a tricky person to deal with, the very strong personality. There are other parts of his story that have some really sketchy details associated with them, like suspicious deaths and all of that. And a lot of these folks were members of his own family. These were, you know, deaths that maybe would have benefited from him, right? Including his mother and father, both of whom passed away at times that financially lined up with Robert's interests, let's just say.
Yeah. Again, the guy who was above the law was never convicted nor implicated in these things, but it makes you think. So, okay, George's house, like we said, Tootenham, is the reason for this jealous wall, which is a nice, opulent folly ruin. And it's built to look like a ruin the same way, you know, putt-putt architecture is meant to look fake. Robert could not stand to look at his brother's new house, which was nicer. So he built the jealous wall to obstruct the direct line of sight between their homes. Mary, who was basically imprisoned, lived with Robert until he died in the 1770s. And the whole time after they had separated, the whole time she was like, "Look, I never actually had an affair. I'm just trying to not live with this crazy, crazy dude. And the laws are strange." And Robert would go around to everybody in town and say, "Oh, that Mary lady, she's crazy." Right? It's tough. And also, I guess we should note that, for the record, pretty sure Robert never called it the jealous wall. Pretty sure other people were like, "Wow, Robert's being a real bag of poop right now."
Yeah, bag of boners. You know, it's true. I mean, it's the same thing. You know, things like this often, you don't really coin the name yourself, usually, even like the name of a manor. That sometimes will be coined by the folks that live there. But, you know, it's like here in Atlanta, we've got the Murder Kroger that folks are desperately involved with the actual business of Kroger, desperately trying to rebrand out of that. But it just sticks. You know, they can rebuild it and fancy it up as much as they want, but people will always remember it as the Murder Kroger. This attitude between brothers or like close friends really reminds me a lot of a really incredible film that I think you've seen as well, Ben, The Banshees of Inisherin.
Oh, yeah.
Starring, what's his name? Brendan Gleeson and, oh, who's that lovely
Barry Keoghan, right? Keoghan?
Yeah, he's awesome. He's phenomenal.
He's so good. You got to watch really the deleted scene from Batman with him as the Joker.
He's a Joker with like a real acid burned face. But in The Banshees of Inisherin, he's sort of like this young kind of drunk kid who's very, very sad. But the story revolves around a pair who were formerly best friends. And then one day, one of them decides he doesn't want to be friends anymore. And it's just about this kind of stubbornness, weaponized stubbornness, you know, that just taken to the nth degree. And this kind of feud here in the story about the jealous wall really reminds me of that attitude. I just wonder if there's a historical precedent in Irish culture of that level of stubbornness, you know?
And it's Colin Farrell, right, is the other.
That's who I was trying to think of. Yes, of course. Yeah. Who was also in The Batman.
Yes.
Unrecognizable as the Penguin.
Now that's acting. It's funny. I was hanging out and talking to one of my friends about different people we met in Austin, and one of them said, well, any of those people could have been Tilda Swinton.
That's very true.
You would never know.
Is expert. Yeah,
yeah, Colin Farrell got the Swinton level stuff with that. So if you go there now, you'll see Tudenham House, the fancy new one in the story, has fallen into disrepair. And it's kind of a ruin, but you can still get a tour of the Belvedere House, and they'll tell you the story of the jealous wall.
This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on the incredible true story, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare reveals the gripping tale of the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Get tickets now for this action comedy masterpiece that defies expectations, showcasing how one daring mission reshaped history and set the stage for modern black ops warfare using unconventional and utterly ungentlemanly techniques.
Starring Henry Cavill, known for his iconic portrayal of Superman, and Alan Ritchson, star of Reacher. Get ready for a mission with a little madness and a lot of mayhem.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R, and in theaters April 19th, get tickets now.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh, boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com. you know what? Let's stay with houses. Let's do two more houses. There's one guy named John Tyler who built something called the Tyler Spite House in 1814, and he built an entire mansion just to stop the local town from building a road.
Yeah, that's the whole thing, right? That's another flavor of these kinds of spite houses or spite buildings is trying to interfere with progress, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was going through his land, to be fair, but he knew there was a local law that said authorities can't build a road if a building's being constructed in the way of that road. So this guy is pretty great at his job. He's got his own historical footnotes. John Tyler is the first ophthalmologist in America or in the U.S. to perform a cataract operation. And there in Frederick, Maryland, he is a big wheel. He owns a lot of nice parcels of land that he gets at public auctions. One of those parcels on the courthouse square is directly in the way of the city's plans to extend Record Street south to meet a place called West Patrick Street. And this guy, I don't know how you all feel about this, but this guy said, I don't want the road cutting across my land. I don't like roads being next to my house. Which, I don't know. It feels like that's a kind of a rich person problem.
Yeah, it's that NIMBY thing, you know, not in my backyard. It's a thing we see all the time where it's like people want improvement. They want, you know, they want innovation or whatever. Or maybe they don't, but they don't want it to inconvenience them in any way, like the construction of it. But, you know, this also is sort of an old school attitude about just, no, things must stay the same forever. You know, this is my world and y'all just live in it and you know, get out of my yard and all of that stuff. So he found a building contractor that was ready to go, like ready to start, work immediately. And again, that probably required a little greasing of the wheels monetarily, because once again, this is a bit of a luxury of the wealthy, the spite architecture flex, right? So when the road crews arrived in the morning, they came upon something alarming. They came upon a giant hole in the ground where the road was meant to go. So, yeah. And in that giant hole, there were workmen at work, like they do, building a foundation. A foundation for what? All the while, our buddy John, Dr. John, not that Dr. John, was looking by, you know, sitting in a chair, just like I picture, like you described, just hands, fingers steepled and just cackling, if not externally, certainly internally.
Yeah, it's nuts. And honestly, kudos to him for actually building the house and following through, because he could have just dug a hole and then said, we're going to make a house at some point. But he did build the house. The house is around now. The most recent owners were a family that is now based in the Philippines, the descendants of World War II naval hero Charles Parsons, Chick, to his friends. And when the Parsons were going to sell the house, a Myers family who lived next door took an interest. They had been super involved with historic properties and preservation for several years. They restored their own house, and then they also run a B&B, a little bed and breakfast inn. So that one, I think, is not as dirty as the jealous wall, right? Because that guy may have killed some people, right?
No, that guy was trash. The jealous wall fella maybe even killed his own parents or had them killed. Yeah. I think the statute of limitations on slander has passed long since. But
right.
Still, right? Like, I mean, this guy's essentially building a house in the middle of what would be a road. What were they using, Ben, that allowed them to encroach upon his property in the first place? Is it sort of like that eminent domain thing that we know? This is a little more modern where like the government can take part of private land for infrastructure improvement as long as they pay fair market value or something along those lines?
Yeah. It's like eminent domain. And that's where you can see it all the time, especially if you're in a growing city or a growing part of town where a road gets widened. and someone's front yard as a result goes back, right? 5, 10 feet, whatever. And eminent domain can be pretty controversial to some people, but it's like you said, it's like a NIMBY thing. Most people like the idea of eminent domain so long as it is not affecting them, right? Just like, what is it? Cape Cod? Is it? It's somewhere in the Northeast, in a nice area of the Northeast where people generally love wind turbines or wind power. So
they
long,
kill all the birds.
So long as it's not blocking their view of the ocean that they paid millions of dollars for. I don't know. I mean, Spite, it's crazy. Maybe we do one more example. What do we know about the Hollinsbury Spite House?
Yeah, I'm sure they coined it as that, right? The moment they built it, right? They said,
this house is founded on spite.
Yes, exactly. It's its own kind of foundation. It's a shaky foundation, I would argue. I don't think it's smart to build or do anything based around spite. You know, I'm a firm believer in good vibes.
Start with positivity.
And, yeah, start with positivity, and you know, good things will typically follow. But when you start from spite, you know, who knows what could happen. So, yeah. Most folks are usually content with building a privacy fence around their homes, you know, to keep prying eyes away or to kind of show where their property lines are, you know, through just like a simple fence, a privacy fence or whatever. But John Hollinsbury, who was himself a brick maker, he built a 7-foot wide house in 1830 to prevent folks from using the alley next to his home, because people kept using it as like a shortcut, like a cut through in their wagons, you know, wagon traffic kept popping through there. And I could see that being irritating, you know, but it's also like, it's an odd solution to what seems like a simpler problem.
It's a bit extra. It's a bit extra. I'm just going to share some pictures here in our chat so we can all see this. But it is a tiny house.
It's a prop house.
Yeah. It's there are two windows and one door on the outside. And it looks like something you would see in the canals of Amsterdam. But this is in Alexandria, Virginia. It is about 7 feet wide, as you said. It's 25 feet deep. It is two stories. It's only 325 square feet. And it's an alley. He enclosed the alley and made the outside of it look like a house because he was so mad about not just horse-drawn wagons, but people hanging out and maybe doing some alley stuff in his alley.
Nobody wants that. Right. You hate to see it. You know, it really reminds me too, Ben, of investigations that we've done in the past for stuff they don't want you to know about fake buildings.
Oh, yes.
Where you can create what appears to be a building or a storefront or like the facade of a building in order to cover up things like electrical conduit, you know, and infrastructure or like vents or whatever from subways. And that is what I would also typically associate with eminent domain, where there was an episode of King of the Hill, I think, where like the government used eminent domain to like put a bunch of electrical stuff in a lot near Hank's house, you know, where they hang out in the alley. Mm-hmm. And then in the end, they were able to convince them to build a fake house around it.
Interesting. Okay. So that makes it, yeah, that's the usual compromise for NIMBY stuff. But there is an entire quote-unquote apartment block in New York City that is just a Con Ed power station, and they will politely ask you to stop walking around it because we've been there. But yeah, they were polite. So I'm torn about this one because it sounds like the wagons were going through so frequently that they were scarring the walls along the alley. And you can see the gouges left by the wagon wheels in the living room today. So I feel like if he has the money and he does it and he owns the alley, then it's really an investment, right? He can.
And a creative solution, yeah. Honestly, for what I would argue would be considered a menace. So I actually think this guy wins in terms of like the least spiteful spite house. You know, sure, he's depriving people of their cut through, but honestly, it's kind of rude to cut through somebody's yard anyway. And I think kind of illegal, right?
It depends.
If you hop a fence and cut through somebody's yard to get through, that's not okay. That's trespassing.
I mean, I'm sure he probably posted some version of a no trespassing sign first and people just didn't care. But there was a guy who bought this in 1990 for only $135,000. It's got a great location, but again, it's really small. It's just across the Potomac. And this guy says, it feels like it's a sailboat cabin. He says, you know, I've rented it out for a while to people in the past. And if you walk in now, you'll see the front door opens straight into the living room. There's a regular, you know, like grown-up size sofa. And then there's just past that, a really narrow, steep stairway to the second floor. And under the stairs is the cupboard. There's a little microwave oven on the other wall. You got the kitchen counter. You got a small sink. You got an under-the-counter refrigerator, freezer, also small. There's a table pushed against the wall. It's a micro house, basically. But, you know, this reminds me of some of the houses I've seen in Philadelphia that are also really small and constructed just to sort of maximize the use of space. I've always low-key wanted to try living in one of these places, but the problem is you'd want to live by yourself. I feel like it's not enough for two people. As a matter of fact, the guy who owned it in the 90s, one time he rented it to a couple who wanted to live there in kind of like a biosphere experiment. Mm-hmm. They wanted to see if they could survive living in together that closely on a round-the-world cruise.
I love it. I mean, is this something that's like, can you Airbnb this place? It seems like the kind of oddity attraction that would, encourage that sort of thing.
That's a great question. It is America's skinniest home. I do not know if it is up for rent now.
There are pictures on the internet of folks like going through it. So I don't know if they're, you know, renting it or what, but I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised. There certainly are oddities like that, that you can, you know, like the Twilight House, you know, like in wherever that is, in upstate New York or something. No, I think it's actually in Oregon. Also, I think the Dungeon Family House here in Atlanta, where like Outkast and Goody Mob and all those folks came up making records in that literal basement, and they called the Dungeon Family. I think you can still Airbnb that place here in Atlanta.
I believe you're correct. You can also, if you want to rent the Hollinsbury Spite House, the skinniest house in the United States, then you're going to want to contact Jack Sammis, S-A-M-M-I-S. They live there occasionally. I guess they stop by when they're in town. But generally speaking, it is a private residence, and you definitely can't just walk through it, which means our old pal, John Hollinsbury, was successful. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you. That means we officially, on Ridiculous Historian, appoint him the winner of this Spite Architecture episode. But just this episode, because like I said in the beginning, I feel like we're going to find multiple examples of this, maybe in future episodes. What do you think?
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's not that, you know, again, was it something that I wasn't really aware of until Jeff turned us on to it? Obviously, something, a phenomenon that he has been fascinated with for a long time. And now I think it's something that I'll keep an eye out for, just even in like my, you know, travels and day to day.
And with that, we'd love to hear your examples of Spite Architecture in your own neck of the global woods. Now, we will go toward, I think at some point we'll have to mention the more hostile architecture, like the patios and the benches studded with things to prevent people from loitering or laying down. You know what I mean? Like, you see that everywhere. For now, we'd love to hear more of the historical fun ones. You can find us on our Facebook page, Ridiculous Historians. We'll get social media going at some point for the show, but for now, you can also find us as individuals.
That's right. You can find me on Instagram exclusively, where I am at How Now Noel Brown. Ben, I believe there are two spots on the seas of social meds that people can find you.
Ah, yes. If you sail the high seas of the internet. whether Ecto Cooler or Ocean, you can find me most easily on a couple places. I'll be on Instagram in a burst of creativity, calling myself at Ben Bullen, B-O-W-L-I-N. You can find me on Twitter, where I'm at Ben Bullen, H-S-W. Go to both of those places, sneak through the Instagram story, slide into the DMs, know what's on your mind, got some secret projects on the way as always. If you are on Twitter, you're going to want to get thee to a particular Twitter handle, that of our own, Mr. Max Williams.
Indeed. Yes, you can find me at ATL underscore Max Williams, which is where my Twitter page is.
Twitter page, just thinking about it.
There it is.
We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on a true story, this action comedy reveals the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Starring Henry Cavill and Alan Ritchson, discover how one mission changed history, laying the foundation for modern Black Ops warfare.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R and in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Avalon Waterways. Ben, are you in major need of a vacation right now?
Noel, you're a mind reader. I am, and aren't we all?
We are. While cruising remains popular, there's something big happening in the industry, and that is, my friend, smaller ships.
True story. The intimate ships of Avalon Waterways can go where the big ships can only dream, through winding passageways of rolling vineyards and castled hills into the heart of timeless cities and storybook villages.
That sounds like a delight. See how Avalon's smaller ships promise greater discoveries, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.